It's Tony Mack and the Triplett with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplett, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown over!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are, Tony Mack and the Triplett.
Good morning and welcome into Tony Mack and the Triplett here on Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. It is 9 a.m. We are here in the Athens studios, beautiful palatial Ump studios here in Athens, Alabama, broadcasting now apparently just about statewide, it feels like, because of the new signal strength. I think, Aaron, it even reaches all the way out to Guntersville. We know the stretches that it hits on the interstate, as we found out on the Tom Abraham show yesterday. So a lot more people getting this broadcast. Not often. You're not going to find too many more radio stations that are going to carry live and local sports this early on a Saturday morning. Try to find me somewhere in this area. I think that we are one of the only ones around here doing that, Aaron. So we've got to give these guys a good show. Again, good morning. I am Tony Mack, the Tony Mack part of the Triplett. And my friend Aaron over here is the Triplett part, obviously, of the show. We've got a lot to get to today. We've got your AFC and NFC championship matchups. That means after tomorrow, we are going to have a Super Bowl set for you guys. Which I hate the layover week, but you'll have that week. We'll talk to you guys. We'll have two more shows before the Super Bowl is played after this week. But we will have a Super Bowl matchup for you after tomorrow. So we will talk about the road getting there. We'll talk about the teams playing this weekend, how entertained you guys are by that. We have, even though college football has been over for a couple of weeks, there's no shortage of conversation on that end, especially locally with Alabama going with co-offensive coordinators, Auburn's new athletic director, Alan Green, coming from Buffalo. You got Auburn and Alabama basketball both playing later today. Auburn's got the 5 o'clock game at home against Georgia. Alabama hosting Mississippi State, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We got future Heisman odds already out. I think that might be worse than the way too early top 25, except I think the way too early top 25 has become kind of a joke and fun. I don't think the early Heisman odds are kind of fun. That's more of a guessing game than anything. New NCAA transfer rule, possibly. That is heating up again. It's kind of been off and on. The flames never died, but it's kind of being fanned back into a bigger flame every so often, and now it's picking up more and more steam. And we even have some controversy with Gus Malzahn's contract. Not really controversy, more so people just wanting to know the details. And those details were finally released, so we'll talk about that here in just a second. A lot going on, obviously. Again, I mentioned the guy on the other side of the desk here, good friend of mine, Aaron Triplett, the Triplett part of this deal. Aaron, good morning. How are you, man?
It's good to be back. I mean, I got up this morning and actually didn't sleep that well last night, believe it or not. I woke up with a headache at about 4:30 in the morning, and puppy was whining because for those that don't know, I don't know if we told the show, we did get a new puppy, and I tried to go back to sleep, couldn't. I ended up getting up about 5, but the good thing was that Australian Open was on, being a good tennis fan, and not only was the Australian Open on that early, but it was Roger Federer playing and advancing into the fourth round, or the round of 16.
Big Fed fan Aaron is. Aaron has played tennis basically his whole life. Big tennis fan, big Federer fan. Now, just to clarify for everybody out there listening, when he says we got a new puppy, him and his wife, me and Aaron do not have a puppy together. I have two cats with my wife, so that's already enough to handle. I can't handle a puppy with you, especially because you live like 2.5 hours away from me. So that's not how that's going to work out. Puppy with your wife.
Yes, my wife and I, we've always wanted to adopt from a shelter, and we finally got to a couple weekends ago. He's a lab mixed puppy. He's adorable. He's got a sock on one of his feet. He's cute as can be. It was coming off the really tragic thing that happened in our family with our kitten that we had gotten really close to, got really sick and passed away suddenly. and very sad. But we went, and it was something was missing from the house, as it happens when you can't. I'm a big believer, and you can't replace pets. But when you know something's missing, something's missing. And we helped an animal in need, and Gizmo, our other dog, is finally getting used to him. I still don't think that he's totally used to him just yet. But
that's funny because our older cat, Lakin, is just now getting used to her sister, Kiara, and we've had her for a year. So a little different.
It's funny when you see how you spend so much time spoiling that one, because I know how y'all spoiled Lakin.
Oh, my God.
And how we
spoiled. Jen's spoiled, too. My wife's spoiled. I'm spoiled. Everybody in that house is spoiled.
And you know how we've spoiled Gizmo and now bringing a second one in. And I think he warmed up to the cat, Cleo, a little bit more than he has Shadow so far, but I think that's because Cleo was a cat, and
Shadow's going to be a big,
a little
boy
bit more independent. Shadow is going to be big.
More importantly, you reminded me of how thin of ice you are on with me, because you not only did you want to talk about something we're going to talk about here in just a second on the show, right before we come on air, you said a good off topic would be this. Also, I forget you didn't even do a show last week. You left me high and dry. You had to go coach basketball or whatever.
I did have work.
By the way, can you clarify? Because I'm an awful friend, and I told everybody you were coaching basketball, and then I forgot what you coach. Is it ninth grade?
It's ninth grade basketball.
Because I said eighth grade last week, but I didn't feel confident. Okay, it's ninth grade basketball. I feel like I should have known that, but at the same time, what you did this past week erases everything. You were the worst friend anybody could ask for. This week, me, Aaron, his brother Kevin, our other friend Jordan and our other friend Tyler were a really close group. They were all involved in my wedding. We were all involved in Aaron's wedding. I'm assuming in some capacity we'll be involved in the others' weddings whenever those happen. They have to meet women. But we have this iPhone. We've had this iPhone group for as long as I've known them, three-plus years. And we go back and forth changing the names of the groups. Cool group names. I usually, based off of conversations we would all have, mainly inside jokes you guys used to have, those were the inspirations for the name, but I was proud of myself in coming up with the best group names and that you guys would like, because mine stuck around the longest. And Aaron went and did something this week that ruined that. What'd you do, Aaron? Tell everybody what you did. You sound sad when you say this.
I'm not going to be sad about it because I'm actually happy about it, but I think I set the world on fire by going out and getting an Android.
You are the devil.
Well, it was about time. All I've had ever since I've had smartphones, which is since about spring of 2011, is iPhones. Slowly, every now and then, I'd get a good upgrade. And 2 years ago, I got the iPhone 6S for Christmas, and I loved it. But it did. It's just 2 years old, and it was already lagging. A lot of things wrong. I got sick of the cloud because we're all on one cloud, me and my family. So I told my parents, when I get a new phone, I'm getting an Android. I just made the decision, and
not thinking about anybody else, obviously, just being really selfish because it's the worst group in the world. Now you can't name it. And for those of you, I don't mean to scare you guys or hurt your feelings, but now we have to send text messages. You know how gross it is? We don't get iMessage, the blue cool stuff anymore. We get the green gross text messages. It's a good thing we have unlimited text.
The funniest thing was our buddy Jordan sent a text, or he sent a picture with a text message that said, "When I send a text in green," and it was a picture of a horse and buggy.
It's the worst thing that anybody could ask for. But while we got you here, we're going to throw the phone thing to the side. You're awful for that, by the way. But something you mentioned something when we were prepping for the show, and it's been stuck on my mind because I know a lot of people felt this way, but now that they've heard him talk, they feel a little differently after watching his presser. I don't think you got to catch it because you've been really busy. So you still hold that same view that everybody had before, and that is the new athletic director at Auburn, you being an Auburn fan. Alan Green from Buffalo, definitely right. Reading it doesn't jump off the page when you first hear the hire. Not a sexy hire, as you said, an outsider, and that's a view a lot of Auburn fans had coming into the hire. But that everybody else told him to keep an open mind, and they did. And they went into his introductory press conference yesterday, and he came out like you said, setting the world on fire in a good way this time. I mean, he came out with a combination of humor. He's very poised. He's got great charisma, and he seems like he's already ready to jump on the ball. So explain to me, being someone who hasn't really gotten to catch up on everything he got to speak on yesterday, why, before he came and just stole everybody's hearts yesterday, Why did you think this was such a bad hire?
I was just skeptical because it was someone that I had never heard of. They were from the MAC, small conference from Buffalo. Nothing just jumps off the page at you. It just seems like a – I don't know if you know if it was a safe hire. It was just a boring hire, nothing out of the box. And I think they were going for outsider. I think the board and whoever was making these decisions was going for an outsider because Jay Jacobs had been an was the definition of Auburn. And while a lot of people questioned Jay Jacobs' decisions at times, the one thing that was never questioned about Jay Jacobs was his love for Auburn University. He bled orange and blue, loved it. You know, he was that kind of guy. And now they're going with an outsider who's not familiar with that Auburn family, that he doesn't bleed orange and blue. I understand
going blue, doesn't he? Buffalo
blue. But I understand going for the outsider because I agree that there was a degree of change that's needed at the university right now in the athletics department.
Well, the bonus for him, the upside for Allen Green coming in, is he doesn't have anything too harsh to decide right away. He doesn't have to make a coaching hire, a big splash, because you've got Gus Malzahn, who the deal is still on the table, I think. I mean, they're still working some smaller details. The contract he has, I don't think, is signed by the president of the university, but it's going to be. It's going to get done. So he doesn't have to make a decision with the football coach one way or the other. Eventually, he's going to have to decide what to do with Bruce Pearl, but Bruce Pearl has to go and talk to the president of the university first. So he has an opportunity to settle in and do some other smaller things and kind of build himself around before he has to make something. He's not coming in right away and making a really big decision with a really big part of Auburn Athletics, which I think benefits him, that he doesn't have to do that right away. He gets to, you know, build his reputation doing some smaller things he's more comfortable with, like raising money and getting the ground rolling with a football facility, a football-specific facility, kind of like A&M and everything. He came in joking about it right away, but the more you listen to him, the more serious he was about it. He's saying that that's a very that's a big focal point right away that they want to get rolling, and he's great at raising money. He did that at Buffalo, and he did that very well. So he gets to kind of start by doing something like that, and I think that helps a bunch. And my question now, because I believe this as well, but if he did come in, let's say that Allen Green was the guy September or early October. He comes in, you know, mid-football season, it'd be kind of tough, but he has to come in. If you have your guy in place before the end of the season, Allen Green or otherwise, does Gus Malzahn get this deal? Does he get this contract?
It's tough to say. I think what got Gus Malzahn this contract, this deal, was he beat Georgia and he beat Alabama. And not only did he beat those two teams, but he dominated both those teams. Dominated the complete crap out of Georgia in the regular season game. And then physically beat Alabama at the line of scrimmage. You know, just kind of, I mean, beat him by 12 points. So that those two games got him this contract. And I think that whether it's Allen Green or whether it was anybody, I think that he gets that. I don't know if he gets the extension because he already had an extension going to, I think it was 2020, and had a smaller raise put in place a couple years ago. So maybe not. I don't think anything gets really done. But at the same time, there's a threat of losing him to Arkansas. They wanted to try to persuade him. So I think that was some.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
That had a lot to do with it, I think. And here's my take on it. I think that I'm kind of wishy-washy. I could go either way.
I'm leaning one way. I'm leaning towards probably not.
But I am too. I'm leaning towards probably not.
But at the same time, you got to think about it. A new guy comes in. You don't want to be the guy. I think the big deciding factor was the fact that before the deal got done, Gus said he wanted to be at Auburn. Like he said over and over again, I hope so. I hope I'm the coach next year. I want to be the guy here. For a new guy to come in and turn that guy away would have been really tough, a really tough start as the athletic director. But at the same time, he wouldn't have been leaving him in a bad position. He would have been able to go to Arkansas, you know, where he's from, and he would have gone there if Auburn didn't take him back and sign him to this big deal. And speaking of that deal, his contract, we know it's, 7 years, $49 million. Yesterday, the big deal, the big the big blow up about this contract was how much is guaranteed. We need to know how much of this thing, how much is he getting? And Stephen Leith, Auburn's president, came out and he wouldn't say it. AL.com, thanks to AL.com, I know how much is guaranteed now, and I'll tell you in just a second. But he was saying it's well under 100, more than 50% is guaranteed. Now we know that 75% of his contract, still unsigned by Leith, but they did say that the percentage is not negotiable anymore. That is the set percentage. They're just trying to finalize some other smaller details. 75% of this deal is guaranteed. There's no offset language. The deal's not going to... He won't get a lesser percentage if, based on his salary at another job, if he were to get fired and take another job. So 75%, no matter what, guaranteed. Doesn't matter where he goes, how much he's making anywhere else. 75% if he is to get fired, guaranteed. How comfortable are you with that? I have to ask you. I have to unload all this stuff. You haven't been here.
That just means it's a huge buyout, and there's not much to...
Still don't know the buyout yet. I'm curious of that, but I mean... I'm wondering, well, we know it's 75%, so there's not a set buyout, I guess. I don't know how that works. I'm assuming not.
Yeah, they'll be paying him for a long time.
Just depends. Like you either have to, after 1 or 2 years, suck it up and pay a lot of money, or you have to ride this thing out for like 5 years and pay a little bit of money.
Like Notre Dame and Kansas were paying Charlie Weiss a couple years ago. He was like the third highest paid coach in college football, and he wasn't even coaching.
I'm wondering if I'm going to be able to pay my student loans off before Charlie Weiss is paid off at Kansas or Notre Dame, or if I'm going to be able to put my kids through, if I'm done putting my kids through school before Notre Dame's done paying Charlie Weiss. They're paying that thing's still going, right?
I want to say it is. It is ridiculous. And here's my thing on Auburn and on Gus Malzahn. When I heard about the extension, I didn't want him to go to Arkansas. I just didn't, because I didn't want to have to play him every year again. And this is the bigger thing. Gus, he's a pretty decent coach. You've heard my rant about Gus Malzahn on this show before, about how Auburn fans are. I mean, Paul Feinbaum put it well a few years ago, earlier this year, after the Clemson game. Auburn fans are sick and tired of being sick and tired, and it's not being able to beat any team of substance. So he went out this year, and he lost to Clemson. He lost to LSU. And then we were like, they're going to lose to the only four teams that it mattered a crap at all that they beat. Clemson, LSU, Georgia, and Alabama. They're going to go 8-4. And then they went out and they beat the dog out of Georgia and then beat Alabama. And everybody's back on the Gus bus again, and including myself to an extent. And then, of course, they went and lost the SEC championship game, lost the bowl game, and all this. Here's my thing. Gus has beaten Nick Saban in Alabama twice since he's been there. He's like 2-4, I think, or 2-3 against Alabama. And he's 2-something against Georgia as well, which isn't great. But especially he's the only current coach in the SEC to have beaten Nick Saban in Alabama. And if he's going to do that once every 3 or 4 years, I'll take that. My thing is I'm more afraid. I am more content with Gus Malzahn as the head coach, and I'm terrified of who they would actually hire if they were to fire him.
Now,
terrified.
Yeah, that's a good point, but like you just said something. You said you would be content with beating Alabama, you know, every 3 or 4 years. Now, my point to that, I agree with you, but my point to that is if you're going to beat Alabama once every 3 or 4 years, you have to make it count. And what I mean by that is you have to compete for a championship if you're Auburn and you're beating
Alabama.
And they
had a chance, and they lost the rematch to Georgia. They weren't completely healthy, but they got Georgia played a much better game, were much better prepared than the first. They learned from the first time and came out and played a good game. But you're right, they were one game away from playing in the playoff with the two losses. They controlled their own destiny like everybody thought, and they got beat. And part of me was okay with that.
That losing the SEC championship, if you're Auburn and Gus Malzahn and you beat Alabama, you can't lose the SEC championship. You have to at minimum, if you're Auburn and you beat Alabama, you have to be in the playoff. That needs to be the expectation.
It does. I agree. Part of me, though, was okay with it, and I'm going to tell you why. I didn't want to get into the playoff and beat Oklahoma. Let's just say Auburn got in and beat Oklahoma. Let's just per se. And then they had to play Alabama again in the national championship. I would not want to do that because, number one, I don't think that I could survive that. I can barely survive the Iron Bowl in general when both teams are good, like this year in 2013 and 2010. Just too much stress. But for it all playing again, number one, it takes away from the rivalry playing once a year. And number two, I don't think they could have beat them again. Not away from home, healthier. So I didn't want to play them again. Just taking it off it didn't make it better that the two biggest rivals who Auburn had both beat in the regular season were playing for it all. But I didn't want that pressure just as a fan. And a lot of Auburn fans would disagree with me. Like, oh, yeah, I'd want that other shot. No, you wouldn't. Because you wouldn't want I just don't know if I could take it, personally.
I know exactly what you mean there. Now, before we're gonna take a quick break. But before we go to a break, something really interesting when you think about it, and I don't think too many people have. I've seen some people talk about it. You've got when the progression of winning a national championship, you got to win your division. Win your conference, normally, typically, win your division, win your conference, win the championship. That's your progression, right? The SEC West champion, the SEC conference champion, and the national champion are all in the SEC, all three different teams. How crazy is that? Auburn won the West, Georgia won the SEC, Alabama won the national championship. How insane is that?
I mean, it's just the SEC, those three teams were so much better than the rest of the teams in the conference this year. And Georgia, in my opinion, I agreed with Colin Coward, said this, Georgia won the SEC but was the third best team in the conference. And I can agree. At full health, Auburn was the best team in the conference this year. I think they're at full health, playing their best football, they could beat anybody in the country. Now, could they do that that's the testament to winning it all, because Alabama fans are like, oh, he still won the national championship. Hold on. Let me finish. It was – you got to play like that more consistently, which Alabama does. Auburn played like the best. Auburn was the best team in the country by far. I don't even think you could question it for 2 weeks. They showed up in two games. You tell me a team who could have beat them in those two games that they played. They beat the two teams who played for the national championship by double digits. There's not a team in the country that could have beat them those 2 weeks. Now you got to bring it every week, and then the following week after they beat Alabama, they didn't bring it. They were a little hurt, but they didn't bring it. So you got to bring it every week. That's just part of it.
I think the biggest MVP of the entire season for me, Georgia fans, and that's because they turned every neutral site game and every road game into a home game. They went to Notre Dame and was like 70-30 Georgia fans. They went to the Rose Bowl. 70-30 Georgia fans. They obviously, the SEC championship and the title game, a lot of Georgia fans because it's in their backyard. But MVP goes to them because they flipped home field quite often this year. The best, in my opinion, the toughest place to play in the country this year, Starkville. Starkville, Mississippi, was because they were such a night and day team. Just some superlatives handing them out there. But they were such a night and day team this year. Like Georgia and Auburn spanked them because Mississippi State had to go on the road. They looked horrible in those games. They turn around, they invite Alabama into Starkville. They smack LSU. They invite Alabama into Starkville. Almost pull off that upset. That was insane, just while we're throwing out superlatives there. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we've spoken a lot about Auburn. We're going to talk a little bit about the other decision for the other team in the state, Alabama. I don't know if you heard of them, national champions. They have a new offensive coordinator. In fact, they have two new offensive coordinators. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break right here, 730, 103.9 The Ump. This is Tony Mack and the Triplet.
Sports Radio 730 and 103.9 The Ump. WUMP.
Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplet here on 730, 103.9 The Ump. We spent the better half of the first segment kind of filling everybody in on what's going on around Auburn. Gus Malzahn's contract, how much is guaranteed? 75%, by the way. Still not signed by the president. We were discussing the athletic director hire of Alan Green over there on the Plains as well. Good hire, in my opinion, after hearing him talk yesterday. Really like what he's selling over there. If you want to weigh in on what we've already talked about or what we are about to talk about, you can do that at 866-485-9867. That's 866-485-WUMP. You can also hit up the Twitter at Tony Mack UMP is how you can get at me. At A Trip Tennis is how you can follow Aaron, and at Tony Mack Triplet is how you can follow the show. And we are both in the bio there, so you can just click on us can follow, tweet your response to anything we've talked about today. We are going to talk about the offensive, co-offensive coordinator hires at Alabama. Their search for a defensive coordinator is still ongoing, I believe. But first, let's go to the lines immediately. You ask people to call, they call. You're on with Tony Mack and the Triplet. How are you this morning?
Is this 103.9 the Blowtorch?
This is the Blowtorch. I can't say it like you can. This is Tom Abraham. For you, for those of you who don't know, I know him off the air. First time, long time.
I'm in Estill Springs between Winchester and Tullahoma, going to the dump with my son with a load of crap on the back of the truck. And I'm listening to Tony Mack and a Triplet on the Blowtorch.
Well, we all always... Do what? We always appreciate the support from the big dog himself. Now, you called at a perfect time because we're about to get it. We discussed Auburn the whole first segment. We're about to get into the co-offensive coordinating situation going on at Alabama. Now, again, for those of you who didn't get to listen yesterday, fill them in a little truncated edition of your opinion on the whole co-offensive coordinator deal at Alabama.
Well, I think they did the right thing. I mean, Mike Locksley is a guy that the players love, and, you know, he's been there for a while, and he has a real good college, you know, offensive coordinator mind. I think that the guy that should be emboldened a little bit by this is Jalen Hurts, because I think this is the read option guy, and so he'll have an opportunity to compete, I think, with Tua Tagovailoa better than he would if Brian Daboll was there, which is not a negative thing necessarily. And then the interesting, the intriguing part is bringing in Josh Gattis as the co-offensive coordinator, an outstanding recruiter, 41 years old, a guy that's worked with James Franklin for the last 6 years. So I think they got a good situation there. I'm pretty sure that Tosh Lupoi is going to be the defensive coordinator. So they're going to have a 30-something-year-old defensive coordinator, a 41-year-old co-offensive coordinator, and, you know, they'll be set up for a while. And, you know, this is perfect for Nick Saban.
Yeah, I'm in full agreement with you. I like the fact that they got Gattis, a guy who's really good at recruiting, something Alabama is just kind of spoiling themselves with because they can go out and get just about anybody. But this adds to that. But I think the biggest point is the first point you made, and that is that Mike Locksley being promoted and recognized as a co-offensive coordinator, that is so big in terms of Jalen Hurts still being in the mix for the starting quarterback, because it's my understanding that he had a lot to do with designing a lot of things specifically for Jalen Hurts last year. Is that correct?
Yeah, he did. I mean, he was the guy, you know, Brian Daboll wasn't really a guy that understood the read option much, and it was Locksley that put a lot of that type of stuff in. And, you know, so it'll be very interesting. I mean, obviously, from what we saw from Tua Tagovailoa in a short period of time would make you believe that, you know, this is his job now. But, you know, that's not necessarily the way it is all the time. We've seen other things. We saw what, you know, Cardale Jones did at Ohio State, things like that in a 3-week window. And, you know, and then he lost the job the next year and when JT Barrett came back. So there's still a lot of meat on the bone left there. And I think that there's going to be good, healthy competition. And, but I think from Hurts' standpoint, Locksley being in there is a positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Big dog, I really appreciate you calling in. One more question for you, if you don't mind, because this was our it's an easy transition. I get to ask you a question, and then we get to give our opinions on it, so you get to kick off the conversation. The talks about this whole college football transfer rule and basketball, NCAA transfer rule, I guess I should say, is starting to heat up again, and it's starting to sound like there's a really big possibility that it doesn't matter. You know, you don't have to sit out a year. It doesn't matter. Yeah, well, it matters what your GPA is, but it doesn't matter, from my understanding, if you're a junior or whatever. You can transfer without any punishment, any punishment at all. You don't have to sit out a year.
You don't have to sit out.
What do you think? That could potentially be chaos, right?
No, I love it because you get one. You know, that's the part of it that people aren't talking about. You're getting one. Mm. You get one free transfer. And when you're talking about 18- and 19-year-old kids, I mean, look, they make this decision. You know, my kids can't decide what they want for lunch, you know. And all of a sudden, a kid makes a decision at that age where he's going to play football. He gets there. He rediscovers that it's not what he thought. He misses home. He came from Washington to Georgia or some crazy thing like that. Or some other situation develops. you don't, you got to start giving these kids some benefits. So to give them one free transfer where he can play immediately, I'm fine with that. I think it's a great thing. I think it would be chaos if you had multiple, if you could just keep doing it where you were a free agent every year. Yeah. But to give a kid one chance to rectify a situation, whether he was beat out or whether it turned out the place wasn't where he wanted to be, or the coach changed or whether, whatever, I think that's a fine thing, and I think it'll be good. I think you got to give these kids some benefits, man, because I'm telling you, one of these days they're not going to come out of the tunnel. They're going to say, my coach is making $9 million, that the school is making, you know, $30 million, and I got a free pair of shoes and a warm-up jacket. So you got to give these guys something, and I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, and you well that puts it into a bigger perspective for me. That makes me feel a little bit better about it. So you're saying you don't think the roster turnover is going to be as big as people are freaking out about right now?
No, not with one. You get one free transfer. So no, I don't think it'll be a bad thing to give those kids. Not until they make coaches start sitting out a year when they transfer from one job to another.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see that anytime soon. Well, at least the coaches, if they sit out, they're probably still going to get paid a lot of money. So they might be in favor of that. Who knows?
Right.
Big Dog, I really appreciate the conversation. I'm going to get my friend Aaron back in here. Thank you so much for calling, and thanks for letting us know the range this bad boy's got now.
Yeah, the blowtorch. good stuff. All right, man, have a great day.
All right, talk to you Monday. Tom Abraham, the Big Dog himself. Really appreciate that listening. God, it kind of makes you nervous knowing he's out there keeping an eye on us.
Yeah, the big man got eyes on us.
Does that make you feel a little better now that we've learned a little more about this transfer thing?
Yeah.
You get one.
Yeah, he brought some good points in, and I didn't really think about it that way. You think more along the lines of a lot of people try to twist it, and myself included, into this is just the selfish me generation wanting to, and then the call it not like with the players, and then with the NCAA trying to make this. I brought it up before the show. It's almost more like a business, you know, like rent a player, like go out and you can be talking to other, you know, 1 year. But now I see he brought up the good points. You know, like kids make mistakes. You know, kids don't know what they want for lunch, let alone like if they make a big decision and they go and it's not what they thought. I mean, coach might say anything to bring a player, and the coach could have lied. I'm sure that happens all the time that you don't hear about it, about guaranteeing things and stuff like that. So, well, a lot of reasons, I suppose. So, I mean, yeah, you're right. I hadn't seen anything about the one free transfer, well, the only one.
Yeah, I read a few things about it, and I didn't see that in there either, and that changes my mind a little bit.
I can understand it a little bit more now, and I wasn't totally opposed to the transfer rule anyway when I heard it, but I was like, man, just going to end up being more transfers, which I've been kind of against in the past, but now I can understand it a little bit more.
I just didn't want the spoiled to become more spoiled.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? And you can think of it that way, you know, kids going to lesser schools and maybe things didn't work out in recruiting. They didn't get the offers they wanted, or they didn't get a full scholarship like they wanted, or whatever. And they go to another school, and you kind of feel like they're auditioning to get up to the Alabamas and everything else. But on the other side of that, if a kid like that falls into the lap of like an Arkansas or somebody like that instead of going to a bigger school, that also gives the coaches at those less thought about schools, those lower tier schools, that gives them a chance to make them want to stay as well. So that could help them out. I mean, it doesn't really, the transfer rule really wouldn't affect those lower schools in that way, but it would give the coaches a little more, I guess, incentive to show these kids the benefit of staying there. Look, these guys didn't want you. Look what we're going to give you. Look how we can help you succeed here. There's a lot of different perspectives to look at when it comes to this rule, and I'm glad this thing's at least being brought up again and again and again, because it just constantly makes you think, just like Tom Abraham just said with the 1 year thing, that takes a lot of sting off of this thing. And I wonder if a lot of people are talking about that because they want you to talk about the chaos and the madness that this thing could potentially bring college football and college basketball. Don't forget, it's not just a football thing. It is a basketball thing as well. But that really calms my nerves and almost makes me all in on this thing. I really, automatically, you can look at the benefits of that. Like he said, the biggest benefit of a one-time transfer is being able to amend yourself for making maybe a mistake. You know, you're a young kid. You may have let success of a program blind you. You may have been told empty promises that they didn't keep And it gives you a chance to make up for that mistake and go somewhere and follow your heart one more time. It's giving, instead of the original way I looked at it, which was, oh my gosh, we're giving these kids, we're not paying them, but we're giving, we're almost spoiling them. We're almost giving them the upper hand and letting them do whatever they want to do. But when he brings that up, it makes me think, we're actually giving these kids a second chance if they need it. A free second chance. We're not punishing them for making a mistake when they were 17, 18 years old and committing to a school. And that is a very important aspect of this whole rule when you think about it and when you decide whether you are for this thing or against this thing. You've got to understand where your mindset is. If you think that, oh, we're just spoiling these kids and they're going to be able to do what they want to do, you have to make sure that that's true. And obviously, that's how I felt coming into this thing. And it when you put that whole one year rule into perspective, maybe it's not. Maybe, like Tom Abraham said, and like I'm starting to realize, maybe this whole one-year deal is just a second chance for these kids. Don't look at them as the bad guy because they're able to transfer. Look at them as being fortunate enough to get that second chance. And I think that's what sports is all about. I mean, we've seen second chances over and over again. And when people mess up, like me being a Baker Mayfield fan, when he messed up, and then when Mike Vick came back out of prison, what do you hear all the time? You hear people say, give them a second chance. I believe in second chances. Let's give them a second chance. Now, this is a lesser degree. This is a kid making a decision that maybe he didn't need to make when he was 17 and 18, making up for that. It's way less than, you know, abusing dogs and going to prison for it. But it's almost the same concept in giving kids a second chance. And if you start that at the lower, I'm for that at any level. So I'm really starting to like the conversation of this rule more and more. And I want to hear more about it because, like you said, Tom Abraham, again, the big dog, brought up that this is a one-year gig. Anywhere you read, you looked up a few. I've looked up several articles. I didn't see anything about that. I'm sure it's buried in there somewhere, but I didn't see anything about just 1 year. So we need the conversation on this thing to keep going and clarify everything, because if that's the situation, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I am too, and I think that it would be good for the sport, good for both sports in that sense. If it's not over abused, I just don't want it to be over abused.
There are going to be instances.
There are going to be instances where it's going to be. See, the interpretation, it'll vary, because there'll be a lot where people, you know, where the rule is going to be abused, but then there are some that are going to be, you know, have a legitimate reason to transfer. I completely understand, you know, the fact of, you know, kids want to go home if they don't particularly like it or they decided to go far away, because I'm a homebody myself. I like being at home. I like where I'm from. You know, being close to home is important, and I can see how that could be important to a new college athlete, because it was to me.
I don't know if I would go as far as saying it could be abused as... It's more so that some athletes, because of their skill, it'll benefit them more. I don't necessarily think that it, with just one free transfer, you'd be able to abuse it. It obviously will benefit kids and certain programs better, because after 1 year, you know, like I said, kids could be auditioning for bigger and better schools. Like, the spoiled could become more and more spoiled. That could still happen to a lesser degree. It's not, you know, not everybody's going to come out and transfer and try to fill up those spots that Auburn and Alabama are letting go. And they're not going to do that to that big kind of degree that we thought, where you can just go get up and go wherever you want to go. But, you know, Chad Kelly could have been a good example. And some of these guys, you know, Nick Fitzgerald being at Mississippi State would be a good example. As good as he's been at Mississippi State, they're not having incredible success. So his great year at Mississippi State could have been an audition. And this year he could have transferred to somewhere who really needed a quarterback of his design and his skill level and the system he runs. You know what I'm saying? They could benefit athletes in that perspective. I wouldn't say that's abuse, but it would benefit some more than others.
Yeah, I think it would too. It would definitely benefit some more than others and in different ways. So... But transferring is something, because, I mean, I did it. I was a college athlete. I transferred from a community college to a four-year school. And I remember reading an article last year, I think, that I shared with you guys. I don't know if y'all read it, but it was one. See, I don't take a whole lot of time to read articles. I skim a lot of articles.
Yeah.
I don't dive in detail into a lot of sports articles. But there was one article that I read last year, and I actually was able to find it just now, about this basketball player who ended up, he graduated, finished up at Texas Tech, I think, last year. Last name was Bransma. Let me see if I can find his first name.
Now,
Thomas Bransma, who transferred like four or five times to follow a head coach, he started at McMurray University in Texas, transferred to Angelo State in Texas, some D2, D3 schools to follow his coach. Then his coach went to Arkansas Little Rock. Remember a couple years ago when Arkansas Little Rock upset Purdue in the NCAA tournament, he was the head coach and he was sitting out a year on the bench. And then his coach got another job offer at UNLV and he was going to take it. So instead he's like, I'm still going to go follow him. So he went back to Angelo State, slept on a friend's couch, got his degree so he could transfer without having to sit out. And then it turns out that the coach took the job at Texas Tech. So he played as a grad transfer his last year at Texas Tech. So, I mean, he went to like five schools in like a short span. It was an article that I read in detail. I thought it was a really, really cool story. And just see that, people are like, that's absurd. But yet at the same time, I'm okay with that. The guy had a real good relationship with this coach. And the coach was obviously thinking what was good for himself. As you know, trying to bet, I mean, he worked his way all the way up to Texas Tech, and the kid wanted to follow him. He said, I read his, you know, I felt like the coach's name was Chris Beard. I felt like he stood for me, so I was going to stand by him, and I wanted to be part of his program. So he went to basically went to five schools. He'd enrolled at UNLV, but never went, and then ended up at Texas Tech.
Aaron and I are discussing the NCAA, the NCAA transfer rule, not into effect, but maybe this fall. Maybe not. That's been some confusion as well, because I'm reading in the same article, I'm reading, you know, conflicting arguments that some people are saying that it could go into effect in August, this August. You know, that's 7 months away. And then some are saying that's absurd. We're nowhere close to deciding that, or the GPA aspect of it. The GPA aspect I read is that in order to transfer, you have to have at least a 2.7, 2.8. They're saying that hasn't been decided yet either. So this thing, when you're digging deeper and deeper into it, they're still working out the details. So maybe we'll have it this fall, maybe not. But there's one thing is for sure. We will be able to talk about it at length anytime it comes back up, which has been often. Like I said, it's been a flame that hasn't gone out. It's just been fanned up more often than not. It's come and gone all season long about this transfer rule. But real quick, guys, we'll get right back into this. We've got your AFC-NFC championship matchups coming up as well tomorrow. We've got a big conversation. There is a big conversation to be had about those. But none of that happens without a break. We got to take a break real quick. More Tony Mack and the Triplet right after this. 730, 1039, The Ump.
Sports Radio. 730, 1039, The Ump. The Ump.
Welcome back, Tony Mack and the Triplet here, Sports Radio 730 1039 The Ump. You guys can weigh in. A lot more of you guys can weigh in now because of the signal strength of this station. Like the big dog said, we are a blowtorch out there. If you guys, I know it's not cold anymore, but next time it gets cold, just a word to the wise, you don't have to turn up the heat, waste your gas by cutting on the heat. Mine gives you the temperature in your car. You can turn it up to 75, 80, whatever. Once you get past a certain number, it just says hi. You don't have to do any of that in your car. All you have to do, stick your hands up next to the speakers, baby. That's right, because we are a friggin' blowtorch. Big Dog, if you're still listening, I'm telling you right now, the Big Dog does this sometimes where we'll produce the show on the air. I'm not going to produce the show on the air, but the Big Dog, if you're still listening, you've kind of coined this whole blowtorch deal. And I'm a big fan. We got to get a guy, a logo guy, to make like a flame coming out of a blowtorch. And in the flame spells UMP. Because we're a blowtorch. All right. You guys are getting a whole lot of ump. You guys are getting a big old dose of WUMP. You guys can weigh in and give us your opinion on just about anything we've talked about today so far. We are about to, on the other side of the break that is coming up here in just a short minute, we are going to talk about your AFC and NFC championship games. That's right. After tomorrow, we will have a Super Bowl matchup, so you can get in and discuss that with us as well. You can do that by dialing 866-485-9867. The Big Dog did it on his day off, guys. You guys can call in, weigh in. That's 866-485-WUMP. You can also get in on the Twitter at Tony Mack UMP. I'm doing what my wife does. She calls everything the before. She'll put the before she says something, like we got to go to the Walmart. or the well, the dollar store makes sense. We have to go to the Walmart, the Kroger. I'm doing that with the Twitter. Get on the Twitter, all right? At TonyMacUMP, at TonyMacTriplet. Why don't you just go follow the show? At TonyMacTriplet, because in that bio on the show Twitter is where you can find Aaron and myself. All you got to do, it's a one-stop shop. Click that little follow box in the top right if you don't mind. But again, tell us what you think. Jags, Patriots, Eagles, Vikings. We're talking all of that stuff. Coming up next, right here, Tony Mack and the Triplet, 7:30, 103.9 The Ump. Stay tuned, everybody.
It's Tony Mack and the Triplet with your hosts Antonio McBeth and Aaron Triplet, specializing in the world of sports.
I think they're the best team in the country.
Covering your favorite teams.
Alabama wins!
Touchdown, Auburn!
And talking about whatever the hell they want.
Because he's a good coach. The good talent wants to play for him.
Absolutely not. This is ridiculous.
Now, here they are. Tony Mack and the Triplet.
I think we're in a bit of a unique situation, kind of where there's not a whole lot of guys on the team that have been to an AFC championship game or any championship game, for that matter in the NFL. So I don't think anybody knows any different. We're just continuing to do what we've done all year long and what's been successful for us.
Welcome back, everybody. Tony Mack and the Triplet. That was Blake Bortles of the Jacksonville Jaguars getting ready to take on the New England Patriots in the AFC championship game. I got some audio from a couple different Jags players here. Blake Bortles there. Notice the different tone in conversation of Blake Bortles and this Jalen Ramsey.
At this point, if we don't got respect, then we just it might be a lost cause. We just might not get none. We one of the final four teams in NFL playing right now.
You notice that Jalen Ramsey, it's no accident that the fierceness and the feeling of disrespect comes from the defensive side of the football, and Blake Bortles kind of sounds like he's just happy to be there at this football game. It's because that defense is the real deal, and Blake Bortles, you kind of feel like he's on borrowed time. I mean, he's had a couple of pretty good games. The last couple of games, he played very, very well in the second half of the Pittsburgh game. His running ability against the Bills is what sealed that game for them. But I just feel like he's on borrowed time. He's been a laughingstock of the NFL the majority of the year. People just kind of brushed off him the few times he – I said few, excuse me – the several times he did well this season. People just kind of brushed it off so they could laugh at him more. And then he gets into the playoffs, and that's kind of dwindling down a little bit. People are just waiting to explode and blow up about how bad Bortles is. They're waiting for him to have that bad game. I hope it happens before the Super Bowl because I don't want a dud of a Super Bowl. I think if you get the big guys in there like Brady and on the other side, if Carson Wentz was in there, that'd be fun. Big offensive explosion or a good defensive matchup. I don't want a whole lot of turnovers and sloppy that way. I'm okay with it being defensive, but I don't want self-inflicted turnovers, shooting yourself in the foot, making bad decisions like Blake Bortles has been known to do several times over his career. I don't want that in my Super Bowl. So if he has a bad game, and if he's going to have a bad game in these playoffs, he might not. But if he's going to, I want it to happen this weekend because the Patriots are expected to blow them out anyway. They were a 9-point favorite before Brady jammed his hand up. I want that to happen now because I don't want an ugly, nasty Super Bowl. One of the worst Super Bowls I saw, and it was a big defensive game, but one of the more super boring Super Bowls I saw was the one with Cam Newton and Peyton Manning. It was extremely boring.
It was so ugly, and it was so defensive. And I mean, you can appreciate that. That was one of the games where you just have to sit there and admire great defense, especially on the Broncos side of the football, because they were on a mission that postseason. But yeah, you're right. That was an extremely boring Super Bowl. It didn't help that it was on CBS, the worst of the three networks, and it was in when the Super Bowl is in California. And it kicks off at 5:30 everywhere else. It's still daylight, and I just don't like that.
I'm okay with that.
I don't like it's just everything set up to be a boring Super Bowl, and it was followed up by a boring game.
I'm always into those games that start off kind of in the daylight, and then by the end of it, it's dark. And
I like that with the CBS college football games on SEC.
Usually those games, the games that I can remember that do that, they also have really great endings and dramatic endings and really intense finishes. So that I kind of equate it to that, you know, going into the dark and everything. It's really, really interesting. This year we're not going to get that. We're in a dome, so it doesn't matter what it looks like outside.
And see, I think they need to stop playing it on the West Coast because I think other than you had it in San Francisco or Santa Clara in that one, but I think the previous one that was played on the West Coast was the Buccaneers and the Raiders, and that was a blowout, boring as well. So, I mean, stop going to the West Coast where it's light. Go play where it's going to be dark.
See, you have a lot more picky opinions when it comes
to
the
location. I do. I'm very, I'm extremely nitpicky when it comes about, I'm an atmosphere kind of person.
I like the atmosphere, but the location of the game really doesn't bother me that much. I don't know how much it affects an atmosphere of a game. I feel like if there are two big football teams playing in a big game, their fans will show up. So one way or the other. So that's kind of how I look at it. But you're a lot like Tom in the sense that you're picky about uniforms too. And I can be picky about uniforms, but not to the sense that you guys are. I'm more of just a line up and play football kind of guy. I just don't think about this stuff often. And when you guys talk about it, I don't bring it up in like a mean way. I just don't ever think about it as much as you guys do. And I feel like I should because you guys are so passionate about it. But I just want to line up and play football.
And you're right. I'm a big stickler for uniforms. I'm a big atmosphere person, as in like the setting has to be right. Like, for example, a couple of years ago when the Patriots played the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, I hated those two teams. Those were my first and those are my least favorite and my second least favorite teams in the entire league playing in the Super Bowl. But the atmosphere was good because it was the Legion of Boom defense against Brady. It was on NBC, the best of the networks with Al and Chris. It was in a dome. I don't remember what dome it was. I don't remember what dome it was in. I want to say it was Indianapolis for some reason. I don't know why I want to say that, but I think that's where it was at. And it was just a great game. It was just a great football game. And it was Arizona. That's where it was at. It was in Arizona at University of Phoenix. And it was great. And
you know, I have to stop you because you reminded me of a story, and it has to do with atmosphere. Maybe a different kind of atmosphere for a game, and you've heard this story ever, and it's got a title. When you have a title, then it's always interesting, but either in a good way or a bad way. And I'll let you decide, the listeners, in what way this is interesting. It is titled the most sensual basketball game ever watched that has ever been seen. Now, the reason I know my friend Aaron and everybody else I know is a good buddy of mine, Jordan. He was in my wedding. He was in Aaron's wedding, not our wedding together. We didn't do that. But we met in college. He's the reason I know my wife. He's the reason I basically know all of my friends. And we were best friends. Still are. And it was the Hawks-Pacers. Game 6. That was when the Pacers were the 1 seed and the Hawks were the 8 seed. And he's a big Hawks fan. And they about knocked him off. And they were either trying to force a game 7 or it was either game 7. I had something going on at school at the time, and I was going to go over and watch the rest of the game with him, and I ended up getting there at halftime. I walk into this dude's apartment, okay? And you want to talk about atmosphere? This guy is sitting on his computer desk with nothing, no lighting except for the lighting coming off his computer and 2 candles. Sitting right next to it, lighting up the room. I didn't know if I should leave and come back later. I didn't know if I should call the police. I didn't know what was going on. To this day, no one has ever watched a more romantic basketball game than Jordan Alcorn did on that day.
You've told me that story before, and when you said the most sensual basketball game ever, that reminded me of it. I was like, I've heard this story before.
Just think about it. Yeah. A dude sitting there with 2 candles. Watching a bunch of sweaty guys bust each other up down in the paint, you know, grabbing, smacking each other. It's a little concerning. I mean, our friendship obviously is still strong. Most sensual basketball game ever watched. You want to talk about atmosphere? That guy's a stickler for atmosphere. But I understand what you're saying. And now, I'm like everybody else. I like a good crowd. You got to have a good crowd. But does location affect it that much?
I don't know.
I'm sure if you've got...
That's extremely, extremely nitpicky on my behalf. But
it really is. I just wanted to make sure I'm calling you nitpicky for a reason.
Yes, it is very true. And And I guess because I was watching that game and I was rooting for Cam. I'm a Panthers fan because, you know, Cam went to Auburn. So I was rooting for Carolina. So in the beginning, I guess I really didn't think about it once the game started. But beforehand, I was just like, and leading up, I was like, oh, it's going to be light when that game starts. And, like, it bothered me. But like I said, I'm a stickler for atmosphere. I'm a stickler for, you know, everything has to be right. Like, if one thing is off, then it throws off my mood, at least. Or it affects how I feel about that game.
Well, I know one thing's for sure. The atmosphere in Foxborough tomorrow, whether I think it's the early game, but
it is the early game. Mm-hmm.
No matter what time it's played, the atmosphere is going to be insane. You know, you're going to have a bunch of crazy, entitled Patriots fans watching the Jacksonville Jaguars try to pull off one of the bigger upsets we've seen. And that mainly has to do with everybody's perception of Blake Bortles. Because I would go as far as to say
it's not just the perception of Blake Bortles, but the perception of the Jacksonville Jaguars, you know, in general.
Sure, but that's true. If you had a different quarterback, let's do a couple of different scenarios. If you had a different quarterback, a serviceable quarterback, I'm trying to think of somebody who's not too great. Wouldn't Kirk Cousins be a good example? Because he's been pretty good, but they're still talking about trying to get rid of him. So if you put Kirk Cousins in a Jacksonville Jaguars uniform, how much more of a chance would you give them? Think about it. Think about the team. Think about the defense. But they're in Jacksonville Jaguars uniforms.
More of a chance to win this game than they do. They might not be a 7-point underdog. They might be five.
If you took that same Jacksonville Jaguars defense, that same team with the new quarterback Kirk Cousins, and you took them out of Jacksonville Jaguars uniforms, and you put them in, I'm trying, like a Giants uniform or something like that, obviously you would feel a lot better about them winning this football game. And that goes back to exactly what you said. It is not only the perception of Bortles, it is the perception of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Because that defense is nasty.
The defense is one of the best in the league. And if you're going to have a formula to beat New England, Jacksonville's got it. And believe it or not, they do. They have a great defense. First of all, this team was built in this offseason by Tom Coughlin as the GM. And if anybody knows anything about beating the New England Patriots in big games, it's Tom Coughlin. Now, they've gone from 9 to 7-point favorites, and a lot of it has to do with Brady's hand. And what happened, if those of you who don't know, they haven't been saying a lot of details, and from a personal standpoint, I don't think it's going to affect him whatsoever in this game. Maybe a little bit, but you won't be able to notice it. He got backed up on in practice by a helmet, and it cut his throwing hand open, and he had to have 4 stitches put in.
I would have lost a lot of money on that, by the way, because I would have put the house on it being James Harrison that did it.
So that's what he's dealing with, and he didn't practice Thursday. People are wondering. They asked him about it in media, and he said, I don't want to talk about that at this time. Bill Belichick wouldn't address it. So it's got Patriots fans a little bit worried, just enough to worry Patriots fans. And with what I'm going to talk about right here about can the Jags upset the Patriots, common sense tells you no, they can't. There's no way. They're the Jaguars. This is the Patriots. This is in Foxborough. Brady's having one of his best seasons at 40 years old. They've handled that so-called unrest between Kraft, Brady, and Belichick, the power struggle. It's the Jaguars. We've already talked about it. It's the Jaguars that we're talking about here. It's Blake Bortles.
Also, really quick, you're going on a good pace here. I like it. Really quick, also, the whole unrest between the Patriots, that benefits them anyway. I mean, think about any time they've been under controversy. I spoke about this last week. Any time they've been under controversy, it works out in their favor. You can't count Deflategate the day it actually happened because, you know, it wasn't really controversy then. But the season that they immediately paid for it, not the next year, but the year after when Brady served that 4-game suspension, they went on to win a Super Bowl. They got caught for cheating. They went to the Super Bowl. They went undefeated to the Super Bowl that year. You know what I mean? They've had these problems over and over again, and it works out, and it fuels their fire.
And regardless of that, even if there is unrest between those three guys, the only thing that they're going to do with that kind of disagreement underneath is handle it professionally. They're going to put it to the side, and they're going to handle business, all three of them. They're going to do what they do, and it's just the way that they've always been. And like I said, it is Jacksonville. I was hoping for a Steelers-Patriots because it's more a rematch of the game that happened earlier in the year when Jesse James caught the ball and scored but yet didn't at the same time. I was looking forward to it, but the Jaguars, of course, spoiled that. and not once again, not a lot of people are believing in him. And Jalen Ramsey comes up with a good point. You know, he's got that trying to bring that attitude, that swagger. But now, if you're going to look for the formula to upset the Patriots, with everything going against the Jaguars right now, all the points I've already said, they have the formula. There's a few different things. Number one, they run the ball. They run the ball very effectively. Leonard Fournette ran for just over 1,000 yards in the regular season. They're first in the league in number of rushing attempts this season. They ran the ball more times than any other team in the league. They led the league in rushing yards, and they were second in the league in rushing touchdowns. So they have to run the football. They have to keep the ball out of Brady's hands as much as possible, which, looking back what the Giants did in the Super Bowls, they attempted to keep the ball away from Brady. So they have to run the ball effectively. They play fantastic defense. This defense is second in total points. This team is second in yards, behind Minnesota, of course, which is another great defense. They're first in allowing first downs. They've allowed the fewest first downs of any team in the league all season. They're first in passing yards. They've allowed the fewest passing yards of any team in the league this season. They've allowed the third fewest passing touchdowns. They're second in team interceptions, and they're first in yards per pass attempt allowed. So this is a great passing defense. This defense was built this offseason. They paid a lot of money for it. They drafted well. They're coming around. They've been great all year. They're not as great against the run. They're 21st in yards and 6th in rushing touchdowns. But they give up some yards on the ground, but they make up for it in the passing game. So they have the great defense, and they run the football effectively. Those are two things that the Jaguars do well that don't get a lot of respect, don't get a lot of attention.
Yeah, and to your point, you mentioned Leonard Fournette's ran for a little over 1,000 yards this year. He's also been hurt as well.
He has been banged up. He missed like two games.
He's missed a few, and think about the games he hadn't been fully 100%. So their running attack may be a little better than you think. They're big and physical.
The good news for them is he looked pretty healthy against Pittsburgh. I think they're still saying that he's still being bothered by an ankle, but obviously he's going to play in this game.
I think there are two big factors for me in this game that aren't as obvious. Number one, I mean, everybody knows about the Jags defense. Obviously, they're going to have to show up, probably try to score off of a turnover, which is going to be tough because one of my points is the Patriots getting comfortable enough to use that tempo that they did against the Titans. Now, the Titans defense is a lot worse than the Jags. I get that. But if you allow them to get into the groove, that groove Tom Brady can get in, and they don't necessarily have all the best athletes around them, a running back, wide receiver. They do have Gronk. Brandon Cooks is very good as well. But Brady can get things done by himself, and Belichick can get things done by themselves by design. You get comfortable enough to where you're moving the ball comfortable enough to where you think you can start running the tempo, and you don't think it's going to shoot you in the foot. Start running the tempo and start going three and out. That's giving the Jags more time, and that's wearing your defense out. But if they get comfortable to where they're moving the ball a little bit here and there, and they're feeling comfortable stopping the Jags' offense, Patriots can use that tempo that's almost impossible to stop. It's very tough to stop.
It's very difficult to stop. But one thing to a point that the Titans do is Dick LeBeau's the defensive coordinator. And while as good of a defensive coordinator as he is, which I brought up points to you guys before that he is, he runs that scheme that Brady and Belichick have had so much success against in the past, against Pittsburgh when he was there. They had so much success against it that benefited them in the game against the Titans. Now, the defensive formula that's always been used to beat New England is the one constant is you got to get pressure with four guys. You can't blitz Brady because he's going to pick you apart. He's just going to sit back there. He's going to, regardless of if you blitz him, he's just going to find the open guy. He gets the ball out of his hands too quickly. You got to get pressure with four guys. And he can't play zone. You got to man up. You got to have guys who can cover your receivers one-on-one effectively. You look at the teams that have beaten New England in the past that have done that. The Giants in both Super Bowls had guys who can man up on the outside and rush, and then the guys up front who can pin your ears back and go get you with four guys at the line of scrimmage. And that, Denver that, and Denver did it. Von Miller and those guys did it, and then Tlaib and the guys manned up on the back end. That's how you beat them.
Yeah, that is a huge key. And obviously the Jags have to get pressure with just four guys, which they obviously can. But let's not forget, although the Titans' defense is kind of laughable at times, their defensive front is nothing to laugh at.
It is not, and they struggled getting pressure.
They couldn't get pressure. So, again, that tempo, getting up to that tempo and not getting pressure on Brady, with a guy like Brady that can run the offense like Brady can, being as smart as he is, that's really tough to stop. Now, the second key that I have, a big factor in this game, the feet of Blake Bortles. Now, that's something that bit Buffalo. He had more rushing yards and passing yards, I think, in that football game. Now, he's not a guy that's going to get designed runs or anything, maybe. But, you know, he's a guy that can get away and use his feet and be smart. And
he has to run effectively, and he has to run to do damage. He has to run with a purpose, but he doesn't have to necessarily look to run. But when he does,
exactly,
he has to be effective.
And I think he can. It just depends on, again, how comfortable the Jags can get. You know what I mean? I mean, Blake Bortles and the Jags are going to have to do the best they can to make Blake comfortable. Even if there's pressure coming, they have to design something that gives him relief and allows him to be comfortable. We know the pressure's coming. Let's say the Jags offensive line, they're struggling. They're getting beaten. Everybody knows it. How are you going to keep Blake Bortles calm? A guy that knows he's in Foxborough, he knows he struggles turning the ball over, he knows that he's the guy that this whole game is counting on. How do you still keep him comfortable? You design things to keep him comfortable and let him know that, and by design, not just telling him, but by design, let him know that we understand the situation and we're going to get you out of it. You have to make sure Blake Bortles is comfortable and mentally sound all day long.
And people would think he has to have the game of his life, and you would say that, and I kind of said that to myself. He doesn't necessarily have to have the game of his life, not necessarily numbers-wise. He just,
with that defense, you don't have
defense,
to go out there and play.
And with the running game,
points.
You don't have to play the game of your life, but there's a few things that he can't do. He can't turn the ball over, which he's been prone to do in the past, interceptions and fumbles. But in the last three games, he hasn't turned the ball over. Last three games, his last two in the playoffs and the last game of the regular season, didn't turn the ball over. So he hasn't turned the ball over in three games. And he, like you said, he has to run a ball effectively. He has to run the ball effectively and run to do damage. But he has to be supported by a running game. I think Fournette's got to get the ball at least 20 times, and it has to be 20 to 25
quality,
effective touches.
Now, I agree with you. And here's if I'm going to the Jags and I'm saying, hey, y'all, you guys won this game. This is, you know, Monday. I saw the future and I said, y'all won the game. Here's how you won it. What would you say? What would you say if you saw, like, you're in Monday and you came back to Sunday right before the game. You know how the game shakes out and the Jags won. What would you tell them to do? What would you say? Hey, this is the plan. I saw it happen. This is what you got to do.
It's you have to sack Brady. You have to get pressure with that is the way you beat the Patriots.
I'm with you.
You have to get five sacks probably.
I'm going more of a broader.
I'm just trying to understand
What I'm saying is if I knew that the Jags won and I had to come back and tell them, I saw the future and I had to come back and tell the Jacksonville Jaguars, you guys won this game. Here's how you won it. You won it by putting the game, obviously, in your defense's hands. You're going into this game, Blake, you are going to have to do all you have to do. You're not going to have to do a lot. You're going to have to do the min. I need two scores out of you. That's what I need. I need you to take care of the ball long enough. You don't have to go downfield and throw the ball and get the scores yourself. I need you to take care of the ball long enough to put two drives together and get two scores, because we are going to turn the Patriots over at least once in their territory and get you the ball in good field position. We are going to set you up for at least 7 or 3 points. So I need at least 10 or 14 out of you. And the defense is going to set you up for a score as well. That's how we're going to beat them. We are going to beat them 17 to 14 or 24-17. And we're doing that by putting the majority of the game and the pressure on our defense and making sure you don't have to do that much. All you have to do, like I said, take care of the football just long enough for us to figure this out and put something together to score. That's how the Jags win this football.
Yeah, I agree. And like I said, you know, you got to put it in your defense. Let your defense win this game. You can't hurt your defense by turning the ball over and going three and out all the time, which Jacksonville has a good offensive line. They have a good running back. They have good weapons all around Blake Bortles. He's the question mark, how well he plays. And basically, it's just take care of the football.
And I know it sounds like all the pressure's on Blake because everybody wants to put the pressure on him. But in reality, it's totally different when you look at who the Patriots played last week. They played the Titans. The Titans, of course the pressure was on the offense. That's the best part of their, that's supposed to be the best part of their team with all the weapons that they have. That defense was Swiss cheese and has been it several times all year long. Jacksonville, it's different. The pressure has to be on your defense. You have to expect more out of your defense because that's the strength of your football team. Your offense, you know what you have at offense. You know deep down what you did against Pittsburgh, which Jacksonville's had Pittsburgh's number this year. That's all there was to say about that. And what you did against Buffalo, you just kind of, you sustained yourself against Buffalo. The defense did what they had to do, and you went down there and got me one score against Buffalo, and we won the game. You know deep down if you're Jacksonville that you can't put the game in Blake Bortles' hands and put all the pressure, all the unfair pressure on him. You have to be unfair to your defense and say, look, I need y'all to go out there and win this game for me. That's not unfair. That's not asking too much. That's what they've done all year long because Blake Bortles, but they've been in some shootouts, but Blake Bortles has also been, you know, very inconsistent, had awful games, and the defense has had to win them games. The defense won them a playoff game against Buffalo. Jacksonville put together one scoring drive, and the defense did the rest. So it's not like we're asking the world of you. We're asking you to do the same thing you've done all year and put the majority of the pressure on the defensive side of the ball, but this time you're just doing it against the Patriots. That's all we're asking you to do. All I'm asking you guys to do is just hang on for a couple minutes because we got to take a quick break, and we'll be right back to discuss the NFC Championship game. Also, a couple more things about the AFC Championship game and one play in particular that changed the whole course of the season. It possibly just rewrote history. We'll talk about that coming up after the break right here. Tony Mack and the Triplett, 730, 1039, The Ump. Welcome back. Tony Mack and the Triplett right here on 730, 1039, The Ump. We are discussing the AFC-NFC Championship games. If you want to get in on that, 866-485-9867 is how you can talk to me and Aaron directly, and we will discuss this with you. Now, before we get into the NFC title game and the championship games as a whole, Aaron, a play that kind of changed history this year, if you think about it, that Jesse James, it wasn't a catch, overturn, changed everything. Think about that. Jesse James makes that catch, they beat the pair, or they don't, you know, fake the spike and throw the pick. The Steelers are the one seed. The Steelers play Tennessee last week, who they've already spanked this year. And I know it's hard to beat the same team twice. Jacksonville did it. Jacksonville beat the Steelers twice. Some teams have some teams' numbers, and I think the Steelers have the Titans' number, and they probably would have worn the Titans out again. If that play didn't happen, we would have already had Jacksonville Patriots, and we would have the outcome of that game. So our AFC Championship game would either be Patriots-Steelers like it should be, like everybody wanted it to be, or it could be, again, Steelers-Jags. Just think about it. That play changed everything. And with the conversation I know you're getting ready to bring up about being without star power in these AFC and NFC Championship games, that play changed that. We could have had that Brady-Big Ben matchup. I mean, we also could have had it last week if the Steelers would have won. I understand that, too. But that play affected a lot. Those couple of plays, because you can't excuse the fake spike and throw an interception either. That's in there. After the catch happened, the catch-non-catch happened, the Steelers did something stupid. So you have to at least give them credit for that, or at least bring that up when you're talking about that game. You can't just put it all on the Jesse James thing. You have to put it on the decision-making afterwards. But you brought up something really interesting with Tom Brady being really the only successful quarterback, the only great quarterback left in these playoffs, with four teams left. How does that affect everybody's excitement going into this game? This is something I took the headline from you. This is something you've prepared. So, Aaron, why don't you tell me the effect that this has?
Well, especially at quarterback, does the lack of star quarterbacks take away from conference championship weekend? Because if you're looking at this weekend, it just doesn't measure up to the others that we remember in the past, some that I think of. And I'm, of course, you know me, or at least I say that I'm all for parity. I have always said that. But now I'm starting to reconsider my entire life philosophy because I've always been for parity. And if anybody who knows me knows my disdain for the New England Patriots, there's no inch of disrespect whatsoever. I know how good New England is. I respect everything that they've done, and what they've done is incredible. But I loathe the New England Patriots, for those of you who are wondering. But yet, I would be thrilled if they weren't here. But at the same time, you miss something when they're not here, and you miss something when those other big teams aren't. It wouldn't be the same if Cleveland and Golden State didn't play in the finals. It wouldn't be the same if somebody besides Nadal, Federer, or Djokovic, or I guess Murray, won a major in tennis. So I'm not really about, I guess I'm not really about parity. Do we really want it? Because if you think about it, three of these four teams hadn't played for a Super Bowl since 2005, and it was Philadelphia. Yeah, Minnesota since the 70s, and Jags never.
That's a great conversation, and I'm glad you brought it up because we do need parity, one, I think, because it gives everybody else an opportunity to be that next guy, you know, become the next stars. And it's not like a lot of these guys. I know Minnesota had a great miracle happen the last play, but it's not like these guys lucked into getting to where they are. They got into the playoffs.
And this is not any disrespect to these other three teams. Yeah. It's just
they earned their spot into the playoffs, and then they've earned where they've gotten now. So I don't mind the parity being there. But my question to you is, you're bringing up the lack of superstars, which there's no doubt we have a lack of superstars. Does that hurt your intrigue in the game? Does the intrigue of Case Keenum, two quarterbacks that were on the same Jeff Fisher team a few years ago with Case Keenum and Nick Foles going against each other, does the intrigue of Blake Bortles potentially having what it takes to upset the Patriots, is that intrigue enough to fill the gap of wanting those superstars there? Because, and I think it's difficult to think about, and I just think you have to expect, you have less to expect when you have the lack of superstars, because what you have when you have all those big guys in those big games, what you have is you have familiarity in your own mind. You have familiarity with these guys. You're like, okay, you know what to expect. They are all great players over the course of their career. We've seen them do more great than anything else. So I should expect greatness. Obviously, there's a margin for letdown. But when you have guys like Case Keenum, Nick Foles, and Blake Bortles, obviously because you're not as familiar with them over a long period of time, your mind automatically goes to you could easily see greatness, or you could easily – you want to expect greatness, but you can't. You almost have to let yourself expect a letdown, and you don't want to expect a letdown. You don't want to get yourself pumped up for a game and have a letdown in any circumstance, but there's more space for that in your mind with guys that you're not as familiar with. But I think it's a high-risk, high-reward kind of deal, because I think we could see something really special. Now, you mentioned not having superstars in this matchup. I'm showing you right here is the on the computer you're looking at, the NFL total quarterback rating, and this is adjusted and everything else. Number one is Carson Wentz, which is great. He didn't play a full season, though. Who's number two?
Case Keenum.
Case Keenum has played almost an entire season, and he is number two above Tom Brady, who's at three, in NFL total quarterback rating.
Which is amazing but they brought this point up. If you were to blank out Case Keenum's face and put up his numbers, and just for somebody to read, you would think that guy's going to get paid big time this offseason.
He's a third-string quarterback, essentially.
And he's just a journeyman. And it's kind of his story is really cool and everything. And his story out of college, or his story in college where he got hurt and got that last year of eligibility. He was like a six-year senior. And it's just
all-time passing and total yards leader, I think, by a wide margin, undrafted.
Yeah, it's a really good story. But yet, here's my take. I respect what the Eagles and the Vikings, especially the Vikings, have done, especially defensively. The Vikings, I think Mike Zimmer is a fantastic coach. He can coach his butt off. He's a great coach, great defensive coach. Done it really without a huge playmaker at quarterback both years. And now he's here with a chance one game away from the Super Bowl. But I would trade, it's great stories, great defense. Nick Foles with a second chance with the Eagles right here. But I would trade this game in a heartbeat for Green Bay and Seattle or something like that. Because if you look at – because Seattle, while not a historic team and they have uniforms that I despise, Russell Wilson is a star, the Legion of Boom, Pete Carroll, Aaron Rodgers. I would trade this game in a heartbeat for that one, regardless of anything. And what provides intrigue for this weekend, really, we spent half an hour talking about it. It's can the Jags beat the Patriots, but the only reason that game has any intrigue at all is because New England's there. Who's going to knock off New England? Can Jacksonville pull off this ginormous upset? It's because New England is there.
And that's why I just feel like it's a little – my mind automatically feels like you're being unfair when you would choose those other games over. You're being selfish by wanting to choose those games. And let's be honest, we are. I would do the same, but we're being selfish and wanting to choose those games. It's because, like we said, we've given Aaron Rodgers time to be great. We've given Tom Brady time to be great. We've given all these other guys that you would rather see time to be great.
And we got –
While doing that, these other guys like Case Keenum is using his opportunity now to be great, and we don't want to see it because it's so early and we'd rather see these other guys. So we're being selfish and we're missing something awesome at the same time, because what Case Keenum doing is great, and we're not giving it any credit. But if Aaron Rodgers was doing this right now, we'd be all over it.
We
have to use our minds and just appreciate what we have on the field. Just because it's not the guy that's been doing it for years doesn't mean he's not going to go out there and do a good job.
And we got used to the Packers and Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers being magnificent in the playoffs and Russell Wilson and all these other teams just being great in the postseason. And we didn't get that this year because the NFC was without Green Bay, they were without Seattle, and they were without Dallas in the NFC playoffs. And that hurt the NFC. And if you're looking at – and we're just so used to seeing it, it's almost like we're spoiled with it. We get used to seeing it, and then when it doesn't happen, you get Philadelphia with a backup quarterback and Minnesota with essentially a third-string quarterback, but with Case Keenum. We don't want to see it, even though they've got a bunch of no-names on defense. I mean, the Vikings are a complete no-name defense. They play great team defense, but – There's no stars at all. Stephon Diggs is the biggest name on the Vikings' entire roster, probably. And
on the offensive side, but at the same time, think about how good this Vikings team is. I know NFL-wide, the entire NFL, we've had more superstars than ever go down this year. But the Vikings have suffered from that, too. They lost Teddy Bridgewater last year, but they also lost Sam Bradford.
They lost Dalvin Cook.
Dalvin Cook. They're on their third-string quarterback. They lost Dalvin Cook. But look at the defense, though. You got some big guys over there, but defensive players' names don't get talked about all that often because we are in such a statistical-driven world, and you don't get eye-popping stats from, you know, secondary players and stuff like that. You've got the only reason, let's be honest, the only reason Richard Sherman is noticed as widely noticed as the best cornerback in the game, which rightfully so, he's very good, but at the same time, the only reason he's noticed is because he's outspoken and boastful. That's it. I mean,
and
Xavier Rhodes is one of the best corners in the game.
He is.
And nobody talks about him because he's not out there running his mouth. It's a statistical-driven world and an entertainment-driven world, and that's why people in the defense, that's why when you think there are no superstars on the team, it's because you automatically go to offense. And I do the same thing. I'm not trying to point you out and blame you here. I do the same thing.
Oh, it's true.
I just hate the way that we're designed to think.
And speaking, it's just that's the way cornerbacks are. To be a successful cornerback, you have to be a punk. Like, you just have to play with that attitude, but that chip on your shoulder. You look at Sherman and Norman.
I'm not saying Xavier Rhodes doesn't have that chip, but I'm saying, and I know you agree with me, the only reason that Richard Sherman's a household name isn't because he's a shutdown corner, which we know him to be. He is that. But the only reason he's a household name is because he was publicly a douche.
I was going to bring up that Jalen Ramsey's kind of becoming that next generation punk defensive back.
Yeah.
Because you look at not only I've mentioned Sherman and Josh Norman, Aqib Talib is that same kind of, and Revis was, and now you've got Ramsey coming onto the scene. But you're right, it's just we were spoiled with what we got. We got greatness for so long and so many big games between Manning and Brady. And then, like I said, I'd trade anything for Green Bay and Dallas in the NFC Championship game. Now, Dallas, they were the one seed last year, got beat by Green Bay in just a fantastic game. Wish that was the NFC Championship game. But that would be, I feel like, overly selfish of me.
I just keep trying to find a way to put the way it is in my head. And the reason why you want Green Bay and you want Dallas is because of their long history in the NFL of being great.
It goes back to brands again.
But they earned that greatness before we were born. We always knew them to be great when we were born. So, like, are we missing and a team that we saw become great, there was nothing that we saw become great in our generation, was the Patriots. That's something we saw happen right before our eyes. Are we missing opportunities with the Vikings and the Eagles? Maybe not the Jags. I know that defense is great, but are we missing those opportunities because we're stuck on wanting the past in the Super Bowl. And I'm not saying that the Dallas and Green Bay are awful. Now they're not. But what I'm saying is they're not always going to be. They shouldn't always be the most historical programs year in and year out. They're always going to have that history. But let's say 80 years down the road, a historically great program or a franchise is the New England Patriots. Why can't we have another program? Why can't we be in favor of that with another franchise right now? We're not. Nobody is. If, like you said, if you had the choice that to see the Vikings go to the Super Bowl, which they have a chance to do and continue to build a franchise and become a prominent franchise, let's say they win a couple more. Seattle had an opportunity to do that if they didn't lose to the Patriots. But instead, we want to see that those same dynasties of old continue to be the same dynasties. We want more of the same instead of wanting something different.
And see, even with Seattle, which was kind of a newer brand, you know, but they had Russell Wilson, who was a star. They won the Super Bowl against Denver. But then that next year, they came back. They were playing in that NFC Championship game against Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Aaron Rodgers, who had an MVP season. They were the 2 seed. They just come off that Dez Bryant's catch game in Green Bay. They went to Seattle. They got up at halftime. And it was Rodgers versus the Legion of Boom. They had played week one and in Seattle where they had gotten beat. And that NFC Championship game, which is my brother's bane of his existence, and I'm sure he's listening right now, how he's probably going to hate me for bringing this game up. But that was a fantastic NFC Championship game. I was sick to my stomach afterwards. But you had those, you had polarizing figures. You had Aaron Rodgers, you had Russell Wilson, you had Aaron Rodgers versus the Legion of Boom. Pete Carroll, defending Super Bowl champs, trying to go back. Green Bay and Aaron Rodgers trying to break through for another one. It felt like there was more on the line except other than a trip to the Super Bowl.
Well, here's my question. Take that very same game that you're talking about, the 2015 NFC Championship game. The Seahawks came back. They were down 16-0 at halftime. Came back, won 28-22 in overtime. They scored on the first possession of overtime. There were some crazy things that happened. The onside kick, the fake field goal for a touchdown. I'm not even going to ask the question. I'm just going to make the statement. That's enhanced. Like, that's enhanced as a great moment. Like, it by itself is pretty good, but we consider it great because who was in that football game? Because Aaron Rodgers and the Seahawks were both in that football game. If that football game was Minnesota and the Eagles, if that very same thing happened tomorrow, we wouldn't be talking about it as
we
great
would have forgotten
because,
about it.
No, we wouldn't have forgotten about it, but the narrative of that game wouldn't have been the crazy finish and, oh, that was a fantastic game. The narrative would have been the 5 turnovers in the first half, how sloppy this game was, how ugly of a game, because a lot of people do forget that. We know the finish, we know the outcome of the game, and we know the superstars that were in it, so we automatically just want to go back to that moment, a couple of the great moments that happened in the game, and just want to assume that the whole game was great. It wasn't. There were 5 turnovers in the first half in that game. If that happens tomorrow...
And the Packers stalled just about on every one of their opening drives and kicked field goals.
Exactly. They got in position to score because of turnovers in that game. If that happens tomorrow, nobody's saying, oh, that was a fantastic game because there are no superstars in the game. Their minds are automatically going to go to, that was sloppy, that was awful. And like you said, sure, some great plays would be notified in that game or recognized in that game, but as the game as a whole would be forgotten. It's all about the stars. The stars drive the narrative. The stars absolutely drive the narrative, and it's a shame. Because if that happened tomorrow, like, I'm not saying that if that happened tomorrow that should be recognized as a great game because the 1-15 did. I'm saying the 1-15 shouldn't be recognized as a fantastic football game. It had a great finish with a couple of great crazy plays, but that was an ugly game. And it's all because of the superstars. And I'm not saying get rid of the superstars. I love superstars in the NFL. I'm just saying us. It's our responsibility as fans to recognize what's going on and change our way of thinking. The national championship game in college football this past year, fantastic second half. Fun second half. Entertaining second half. First half was boring. And people keep riding me all the time when I say that. The first half was boring. Oh, but I'm different. I like defensive matchups. I do too. I'm not saying that. Georgia, the reason why it was boring, that both defenses were playing okay, or playing pretty well, but Georgia as a whole was dominating that game. They had over 200 yards of offense. They led 13-0 at halftime. They dominated. That was a one-sided game at halftime. The second half was not a fantastic half of football. As far as actual football being played, it was sloppy. Turnovers everywhere. But it was fun. And it was a fun half. Overall, as a game, maybe not. It wasn't a great football game altogether, but the finish was awesome. And it was awesome because it was Alabama. But if this was Oregon and Ohio State a couple of years ago, nobody's talking about this game anymore. That's it's just a star-driven. It's star-driven sports, and that's because that's how we painted it out in our heads, and we've got to change that as fans. And if it doesn't change, that's fine. But if you want that to change, like I do, it has to start with the fans. We've got to take a break because we're way over time. We'll be right back. Let Aaron close this thing out here on Tony Mac and the Triplets, 730, 103.9 The Ump.
730 and 103.9 The Ump. More sports.
This is Brad Keselowski, driver of the number 22 Discount Tire Ford Mustang. Our fans know that a quick pit stop for fresh tires gives us a winning edge. The same is true for your car. Tires with enough tread handle better, especially on wet roads. So check your tread with the penny test. Insert a penny, Lincoln's head first, into a tire groove. If you can see Lincoln's entire head, it's time for new tires.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association.
Having a place to go after school will make you a better student. Having an outlet to express yourself will make you a better artist. Having something to do together will make you a better family. At The Y, we're helping build better friends, listeners, writers, swimmers, scientists, and musicians, one chance at a time. Give the gift of opportunity. Support The Y at ymca.net. The Y, for a better us.
Every 2 minutes, a child enters foster care in the United States. More than 23,000 of these youth age out of foster care without anyone to protect them and care for them. You can be the difference for a child or teen in foster care. To learn about fostering or adoption, call SAFY today at 334-270-3181 or visit the website at safy.org. Consider becoming a foster parent, an agent of hope. Log on safy.org.
Were you born from 1945 to 1965? People born during these years are 5 times more likely to have hepatitis C. So even if you try to eat right, exercise, and take care of yourself, you could still have hepatitis C, a serious disease that's a leading cause of liver cancer. If you were born from 1945 to 65, you should get a blood test for hepatitis C. Treatments can cure this disease. Talk to your doctor about getting tested. A message from the CDC.
As I went through school, one giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be? First, I had to decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more, so I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore, and frustration a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up impossible. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Tony Mac and the Triplet, wrapping this great Saturday show up with just one more segment. A short one, but you get one more. We're going to send you off to a great day of hoops. You've got Alabama and Auburn not playing each other. They just did that. Auburn won that one. It's not the Iron Bowl of basketball.
Alabama actually won Alabama, that one. I'll correct you.
I was thinking Alabama in my head. Does that count? John Petty went off. I watched the game. I just said the wrong team. Excuse me.
John Petty was absurd in that game.
But you had that. It's not the Iron Bowl of basketball. It's just Auburn-Alabama basketball. You had Alabama win that one. Alabama, today at 7:30, will host Mississippi State at Coleman Coliseum. You can hear that one right here on the Ump. Every single basket, that coverage of that one starts at 6:30, an hour before. You can also watch the Auburn game on the SEC Network right before the Alabama game. Auburn will host Georgia at 5 o'clock, so you can check that one out. There's a bunch of other great basketball games going on around the country today. But Aaron, we really didn't talk much about Minnesota-Philly. I'm pulling for Minnesota. I think Minnesota's going to win the game.
I'm pulling for Minnesota as well.
Why don't you just wrap up in just a minute or two here. Wrap up the championship weekend as a whole.
I think that the NFC Championship game is extremely defensive. It's low scoring, but I think Minnesota does enough on the road. Their defense is better than Philadelphia's, and I think they force Nick Foles into some mistakes. Keenum just takes good care enough of the football to get a big 17-13 win. I like Minnesota. In the AFC Championship game, I'd love to say Jacksonville's going to win. They have the formula to win. They have, but they have to play like it. And I think they're going to play extremely well. I think this game's going to be extremely close. But I think that they give the ball back to Brady with a little too much time, and that defense is on the field for one too many possessions. I like New England 27-24 to go to the Minnesota. New England back in the Super Bowl in Minnesota, however, in the new stadium. So that's who I think. Those are my predictions, my scores.
One, the AFC Championship game, 31-13. I mean, New England's going to blow them out. I'm sorry. I love that defense. That defense is going to get frustrated because they're going to have to do too much, which it should be expected. But Blake Bortles is going to struggle so bad. Bill Belichick is going to have a scheme for him that's going to destroy him. I got the Patriots big in that one. I like Minnesota close because it's in Philly. That is a horrifying
environment. Oh, it is an awful place to play.
Walk into. It's going to be a little cold there, but most of the day is going to be warm throughout the day, so it's not like it's going to have all day to chill and be cold. So the environments in either game aren't anything crazy, but or as far as the weather. But going into Philly for Minnesota is going to be a shock for Case Keenum, but I like him to get it done. I mean, we've seen his numbers. We've seen his quarterback rating. We've seen that defense. So it's going to be quite – I think that one's going to be the more entertaining one. That's obviously why that was a late game. I mean, let's be honest. That you expect that one to be the better game, and I think that's what we're going to get. So give me – I don't have a score, but I'm just going to take Minnesota. If I had to guess, I would say low scoring. I could see this thing going as low as 13-10. I could see it being a low scoring game.
I could too. I think it is going to be low scoring. That's going to be a fun defensive game to watch.
Absolutely. That's going to do it for Tony Mac and the Triplet. We'll talk to you guys again next week. Of course, we will have a Super Bowl matchup. The next two shows we have for you. We'll have much, much more as well. So thank you guys for listening. If you didn't catch all of it, you can check it out on the podcast shortly after. I'll have it here up here in just a few minutes. Again, thank you for listening. See you next week.
Valley Equipment Rental is a family-owned and operated business proudly serving all the Tennessee Valley. Basing the business on you, the customer, Valley Equipment Rental caters to do-it-yourselfers, contractors, landscapers, and homeowners. No job is too big or too small. You'll find the right equipment at the right price at Valley Equipment Rental. Call today, 256-964-6081. Valley Equipment Rental in Huntsville, 256-964-6081. Or online at valleyequipmentrents.com.
Now through January 30th, you could win one of more than 17,000 prizes in the O'Reilly Auto Parts gift card giveaway powered by Valvoline. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today, pick up a game card, and follow the entry instructions to see if you're one of 500 lucky gift card winners each day. No purchase necessary. See O'ReillySweeps.com for official rules and details.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
As a small business owner, you make every dollar count. So what could you do with $10? Go to Vistaprint.com today and you'll get 500 high-quality custom business cards for only $9.99. That's less than 2 cents per card. And at Vistaprint, your satisfaction is absolutely guaranteed. So it's never been easier to turn 500 strangers into connections. Just visit Vistaprint.com and use promo code 4000 at checkout. That's Vistaprint.com, promo code 4000.
Let's go inside the mind of a 10-year-old.
I should have worn earrings today.
Buckle up, Sarah.
Michaela's got, like, the best earrings.
Sarah, buckle up.
I wish my name was Michaela.
We're not hitting the road until you buckle up, honey.
Oh, yeah. Seatbelt. I wonder if there's pizza at school today.
It can be tough getting through to kids, but it's your job to make sure they're wearing your seatbelts. Never give up until they buckle up. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council. Visit safercar.gov/kidsbuckleup for more information.
I'm Sarah.
I'm Ellen.
One night I was at a bar. I had one too many drinks. I got behind the wheel.
I got a cab.
A squirrel ran across the road. I swerved.
The cab swerved.
I hit a guy.
The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Shelter Pets would do anything to get their friends adopted. So Shelter Pets are taking matters into their own paws and making social posts of their very own. Everything these adorable pets touch turns into social post magic. Nudging a ball selects a background. Clicking an emoji adds one. Tapping the keyboard hashtags it. Of course, these posts are adorable. They're made by amazing Shelter Pets. Start a story. Adopt.
The most dangerous day for a baby is the first day of life. Those first 24 hours that should be moments of joy take the lives of thousands of babies every day. In fact, every 30 seconds, another child is lost. They die from infections, pneumonia, malnutrition. The worst part, it's preventable. For nearly 60 years, Project Hope has been working around the world to save the lives of mothers and babies at risk. Right now, Project Hope is training local healthcare workers to safely deliver and care for babies in those critical first moments of life. Project Hope is delivering medicines and medical supplies to prevent deadly disease, giving precious newborns the healthy start they need to survive and thrive. This tragedy can be stopped. Make sure her first day of life is not her last. To volunteer or learn more about Project Hope's efforts to save newborns now, visit projecthope.org.
WUMP Madison, W28OBA Madison Huntsville, a Cumulus station. Sports Radio 730 and 103.9, The Ump.